we'd like to capture your minds right now. Take you a little bit higher.
This is ND Media on Air for the week of September 4th, 2006. I'm Bronwyn Malden with the Los Angeles Independent Media Center and Radio IMCLA. Once a month, ND Media on Air highlights the work of independent media makers around the globe. Today's show is one in an ongoing series created by graduate students in the journalism department at Cal State Northridge. Today's show was created by Sarah Rosenblum and Tripan Kudnak, and they take on the question of fair trade. What is it? How to do it? And why bother? We'll hear from fair trade buyers and sellers, and Tripan and Sarah provide us with a long list of local and online resources for living a more fair and sustainable lifestyle. Happy Labor Day, and welcome to the show.
For those of you who think that you can live a life without politics, we would like to welcome you to reality. Because even the simple act of ordering your soy, non-fat, low-sugar, high-foam cappuccino becomes a political act itself.
Why, you might ask? This show tries to answer this question for you by taking a good look at what is known today as fair trade. Does this make all other trade unfair? You will have to decide for yourself.
I am Tripan Kudnak.
And I am Sarah Rosenblum. This is Indie Media on Air on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and streaming worldwide at kpfk.org. This show is about the world of fair trade. Fair trade is not just a label, but a lifestyle, an alternative lifestyle that everybody can practice. We hope to offer you information about how fair trade works, and we'll give you some helpful tips and tricks on how to become a fair trade consumer at the end of the show.
Up next, an excerpt from a series called Building a Just World, Fair Trade, Ethical Trade, and Canada, produced by Asad Ismi and Christine Schwartz. They discuss the issue of fair trade with coffee producers from around the world. These producers challenge multinational companies by organizing cooperatives and selling to Canadian fair trade buyers and consumers.
The fair trade movement started 50 years ago in Africa and Europe. The fair trade labeling system started in 1989, when coffee was the first labeled product. Today, producer cooperatives and importers for some products have been certified by the Fair Trade Labeling Organization, or FLO, based in Germany. Importers who are certified fair trade give southern farmers a guaranteed minimum price for their crops that is higher than the market price and covers the cost of production. They may pay for products in advance to help farmers avoid usurious moneylenders. Furthermore, importers pay a social premium which goes towards ensuring medical care and education for the communities they purchase from.
Fair trade involves long-term relationships which provide farmers with stability of income so they can plan for the future. With such support, farmers can organize themselves into democratically run cooperatives which share profits equally and promote community development. Fair trade also protects the environment, as most farmers who are part of it are moving to organic farming, free of pesticides and chemical fertilizers.
Today, about 1 million farmers in 50 developing countries benefit from the sale of fair trade certified products. Fair trade certified products are sold in Europe, Japan, and North America by small and large retailers, including supermarkets and department stores. FLO has affiliates in 17 countries, Transfair Canada being one of them, which monitor the retailers that sell fair trade products.
Linda Burnside is founder of Alternative Grounds in Toronto, Ontario's first fair trade certified coffee roaster that also runs a cafe. The 11-year-old business buys only Fairtrade certified coffee and supplies social justice groups, cafes, health food stores, and churches.
What I think is really good about Fairtrade in Canada is that Transfer Canada does actually act as a certifying body. Companies are audited every single year, right, to ensure that we're doing what it is we say we're doing, right? And that is not how it operates. For instance, in the U.S., it does not do inspections. And I think that for fair trade to have credibility for consumers, you have to have an independent third body who is doing the certifying and is actually going out and doing the inspecting.
Coffee is the world's second most valuable traded commodity after oil and the main focus of fair trade efforts. The major coffee producers are Brazil, Vietnam, and Colombia. Fair trade coffee sales in Canada and the United States have increased 50 to 100% annually in recent years. Many Canadian city councils and universities support fair trade coffee, which is widely available in large cities.
Fair trade coffee's importance has been amplified by the collapse of world coffee prices between 1998 and 2001. This had catastrophic effects on 25 million coffee farmers who were driven to poverty, starvation, and destitution. In Central America alone, 600,000 jobs were lost in coffee farming. Coffee prices recovered somewhat in 2005, but are still at only the average for the 1990s. Coffee workers on large plantations, which include children, are paid very little and work under dangerous conditions with few legal rights and exposure to toxic pesticides. Unions are almost unknown. Coffee generates $75 billion in sales every year, but 55% of this goes to only four multinational corporations: Nestle, Philip Morris, Sara Lee, and Procter & Gamble. These companies, along with large retailers such as Loblaws, Tim Hortons, and Second Cup, take 86% of the money spent on coffee. Producer countries get only 8%.
Rufino Herrera is president of Fedecares, a fair trade coffee cooperative in the Dominican Republic. He's a founder of the fair trade labeling movement. He explains the benefits of fair trade for producers.
We benefit because we sell to consumers directly. This includes roasters and distributors of coffee. This setup is the opposite of what used to happen in the past, when we had to rely on a middle person. With fair trade, we are guaranteed a minimum price of $1.26 US per pound of non-organic coffee and $1.41 US for organic. This is not the case in the conventional market, where there are unpredictable fluctuations with many highs and lows. At times, the fair trade price has doubled the global market price. This, in turn, has allowed us to invest in initiatives that aim to improve education and health services in our communities, thus making it possible to send our children to school and improve housing conditions. In sum, the fair trade price permits us to break out from the poverty and marginalization in which small-scale farming and peasant communities exist.
Siquel and Susie Alvarez toured fair trade cooperatives in Guatemala in early 2006. She met Don Julio Tambriz Walshach, president of the Nahuala Cooperative of Small Coffee Producers.
The
advantage of fair trade is that now we are exporting directly to the consumer. There is no middleman involved. With our very eyes, we see the coffee leave our community and the payment arrive directly to our own hands. This is of great help to us.
Fair trade also benefits the environment, as producers must practice environmental protection to be certified.
In the Dominican Republic, Fedecares practices organic methods.
Most of the crops that are sold in the fair trade market are certified organic. For example, here in the Dominican Republic, as well as in other countries in Latin America, we have bananas, cocoa, etc. In our case, the coffee that we harvest is all shade grown and pesticide free. As a result, we are able to receive a higher price while contributing to the better health of our consumers, as well as protecting the environment.
Don Manuel Kema Achalam is secretary of the board of the Nahuala Cooperative.
Around here, people are not used to using chemicals in their production. We are not like the large state farms, which are more inclined to use pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides in their treatment of coffee. Instead, we practice organic farming.
For Linda Burnside, founder of the Fair Trade Roaster Alternative Grounds, fair trade is about equity.
It's based on a more equitable relationship between producers and consumers, and it's based on a fair price, maintaining relationships over time, and in the relationship part, being able to listen and hear people and being in a position of dialogue with people when things change for them, when things change for you.
Alternative Grounds is part of a North American cooperative of fair trade roasters known as Cooperative Coffees.
There are about 18 members of us now. They're generally small to medium-sized roasters who are totally keen about coffee, yes, but also passionate about justice. And having a community of us allows us to buy direct from farmers, which is one of the primary tenets of fair trade.
Linda is concerned about the involvement of large corporations in fair trade, a recent development.
Right now you have a McDonald's in the States that's rolling out fair trade coffee in 650 of their stores. You have Nestle's that just came on board. You have Marks and Spencer's in the UK. It's a very complex, fascinating issue. People say, well, you know, if a higher volume of coffee is being sold on the fair trade market, that's good for the farmers. Because right now, I mean, most farmers sell like 1%, up to 10% or something of their crop on the fair trade market, and the rest is bought at the regular seed price. So, I mean, there is an argument to be made for that. I think that there are also other arguments that would make us a bit concerned about what is happening and why it's happening and who ultimately will benefit. Who is fair trade supposed to be about, right? Initially, the movement was to support small farmers, right? And I think increasingly it can come to be about large corporations and their corporate image, and it can be pushing fair trade into the sort of niche market category. And isn't that a, you know, comment on society when justice becomes a niche market?
For decades, fair trade coffee has been part of the largest struggle for social justice. Jan Braunholz has been a member of Cafe Campaign and of the German Solidarity Movement with Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Mexico for the last 20 years. Cafe Campaign began buying fair trade coffee from these countries as a way of showing solidarity with the Sandinistas, the FMLN, and later the Zapatistas.
In 83, there were many contra actions against Nicaragua, and there was the idea worldwide to help or to protect the Nicaraguan Revolution. One idea was to get this coffee to Europe and also to the U.S. to help the campesinos to get a better price, a more fair price for their products.
You were listening to an excerpt from a series called Building a Just World, Fair Trade, Ethical Trade, and Canada, produced by Asad Ismi and Christine Schwartz, discussing the ins and outs of fair trade coffee production and distribution.
This is Indie Media on Air on KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and streaming worldwide on kpfk.org.
Up next, Kristen Schwartz and Asad Ismi explore what happened after the price of coca fell and what impact Western corporate pressures had on coca plantation owners in Ivory Coast and Ghana.
Cocoa is used to make chocolate and also in the beverage industry. Close to half of the world's cocoa beans are produced in the Ivory Coast and another one-fifth in Ghana. Other important producers are Indonesia, Brazil, and Cameroon.
As with coffee, the price of cocoa collapsed in 2000, driving farmers into destitution. This, along with Western corporate pressure, has encouraged widespread child slavery in Ivory Coast and Ghana. Owners of Ivory Coast's large cocoa plantations use children to clear land for the planting of cocoa trees and for weeding and harvesting crops. The boys and girls who are as young as 7 years are unpaid or paid very little. According to a documentary produced by Channel 4 in England, 90% of the cocoa farms in Ivory Coast use child slave labor, which harvests most of the cocoa imported into England from there. Working conditions for the children have been described as akin to hell. They include 20-hour workdays, 7 days a week, malnutrition, the threat of physical, psychological, and sexual abuse, as well as poisoning by chemicals.
As with coffee, five large multinationals, Nestle, Mars, Cadbury, Hershey, and Kraft, dominate the chocolate market and take most of the profits. These companies collude to fix the price of cocoa at such a low level that farmers cannot afford to pay a fair price for labor. The U.S. and Britain are the two leading chocolate-consuming countries. Mars and Hershey control three-quarters of U.S. chocolate sales, and Cadbury, Nestle, and Mars account for the same percentage of sales in Britain.
Bama Athreya is director of International Labor Rights Fund, ILRF, a non-profit advocacy organization that defends labor rights around the world. She is also on the board of Global Exchange, a U.S. NGO focused on promoting social justice internationally. ILRF has sent labor investigators to the Ivory Coast several times, most recently in December 2005.
The media started to report the problem of forced child labor in cocoa production in 2001, but it clearly is a problem that has a much greater historical depth than just that. In fact, it's a problem that goes back 100 years. I mean, there was a big expose of Cadbury Corporation, the British-based chocolate company, around 1905, just about 100 years ago, for use of slave labor in its cocoa production. And here it is 100 years later, and we're still looking at trafficked labor, forced labor, and essentially slave labor in cocoa production in West Africa. Some of the worst stories that we heard were of boys that were tricked, lured with false promises of lucrative employment, that once they actually arrived at the plantations in Ivory Coast were held in captivity, were not allowed to escape, were forced to work, were not paid, and were threatened with very, very severe punishment if they did try to escape and return to their homes. I think one of the testimonies was a child that was threatened to be buried alive if he failed to complete the work or tried to escape. The only reason we were able to talk to these particular youths at all is because they did manage to escape and return to Mali, which is where they were from.
The ILRF's investigation shows that slavery is fostered by the multinational corporations and that cocoa farmers are not the main culprits.
In Ivory Coast, the companies love to tell you that, it's very dispersed, there are 500,000 farms, and that's all true. There are 500,000 small farms, but frankly, they all go through the exact same hands in order to get out of Ivory Coast and to Europe or the United States. There are 10 multinational corporations that have offices in Ivory Coast that control just about all of the cocoa export from that country. And of those 10, there are 3 corporations that control well over half the cocoa export. And those companies are Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, and Nestle. And so, at the end of the day, that's where the control over prices comes in. The way the picture looks in Ivory Coast is this: you've got this small handful of ultimate buyers and exporters who sit in the country's capital and, really have, at the end of the day, the control over the cocoa trade. Those companies have at their disposal a small army of middlemen, and the middlemen will go out to the farm. And the farms are in Ivory Coast, you know, mostly small farms. You don't see very many very big plantations. So they're small farms. And the middlemen will buy the beans from the cocoa farmer and, you know, be responsible for transporting them, getting them back to the company. One of the things that we found, particularly on this recent trip in December of 2005, is that the official price that the companies are, you know, saying that they're paying is not what the farmers are getting by a long shot. The official price as of the end of last year was 800 Ivoirian francs per kilo. And in some cases, we found the farmers were getting prices that were as low as 200 francs per kilo. So, you know, a lot's getting sort of mopped up in the middle. What that means is that the farmers are producing at virtually cost. I mean, they're hardly getting anything. They were very, very beleaguered, having a hard time feeding their families. And this, you know, is an indication of why they need the cheapest possible labor they can get. And they can't afford to pay decent wages. So they use whatever labor they can get under whatever conditions. So we're not by any means, you know, blaming the farmers. The farmers are not the problem.
Within Ivory Coast, farmers are organizing themselves to improve conditions for children. Fair trade certification is an important tool in this. Global Exchange works with the first fair trade cooperative to be certified in Ivory Coast, Cabo Kiva.
The farmers in Cabo Kiva, the fair trade cooperative, now have a premium that they're getting because they're able to, you know, to get the fair trade price for the cocoa. They're using their premium to build schools for the kids in the region. So, you know, the farmer's not the problem. The farmers have the money to do the right thing. They will do the right thing.
In Europe, fair trade chocolate is available in supermarkets, convenience stores, gas stations, and movie theaters. In Canada, it can be found in large cities and supermarkets and health food stores. The main importer of fair trade chocolate in Canada is the La Siembra Cooperative, formed in 1989 and based in Ottawa. La Siembra's Coco Camino product line is sold throughout Canada and is expanding distribution in the United States. La Siembra imports from cooperatives in the Dominican Republic and Paraguay and gives farmers higher than world market prices. This includes the payment of organic and social premiums that are used for development programs. One of La Siembra's founding principles is that, quote, workers in the North and South deserve meaningful employment, fair wages and working conditions, and a say in their future.
You are listening to an excerpt of a show about fair trade coffee and coca produced by Asad Ismi and Kristen Schwartz. This is Indie Media on Air, KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and streaming worldwide on kpfk.org.
Up next, an excerpt from an interview done by Paul Goodwin. He spoke with Fairtrade tea farmer Julius Isankala, who works out of Kenya. They discuss how fair trade benefits small Kenyan farmers.
Julius, you're a tea grower from Kenya, visiting the UK actually in fair trade fortnight. We drink quite a lot of tea in the UK. I think it's probably about 70% of us drinking tea here. What, over 160 million cups per day are consumed? That's an enormous amount. But tell us what's involved with tea farming. Do you handpick the tea?
Yeah, tea takes about 3 years to come to maturity. So a tea farmer is a very patient person. After 3 years, you start plucking the very fine two leaves and a bud, and that is what you take to the factory. That is what is processed to be the tea that you normally take. Kenya is what you would call a Harambe country. This is where people pool resources to do their own things, to build their own dispensaries, to build schools and other things. And the fair trade has come in handy. In this particular community, people can associate with a buyer on the other side, and they can't believe it. They think it is just a God-sent thing that somebody out there remembers that he is part of a chain that starts with planting of that tea and then ends up with a consumer on the other side, that consumer has accepted to plow some money back so that he has better schools, he can prioritize on certain projects. This has come up as a real welcome move for the community. So the Fair Trade has plowed in, has plowed back some money, and people are having to prioritize on their own projects, and they have put up schools, they have put up dispensaries. The factory community particularly has a daycare center for the children or for the workers.
What about the difference between fair trade and free trade? We hear a lot about the global economy these days, don't we?
If the world would care to look at the chain and have a fair distribution of that final price, it would be a better world. Let me put it this way. For a long time, Kenya has been selling tea here in the UK, for example, and the majority of the consumers are not aware that Kenya produces tea. They still think that tea that was produced in India 300 years ago has been coming here for all these years. India is the only country, or Sri Lanka, India and Sri Lanka are the only countries that produce tea. Kenya has more tea being drunk here in the UK than any of those two countries. Now, that bit is not known because the middleman does not want you to know, or the consumer to know. What fair trade are doing is that they want to identify with that person. So of necessity, the consumer is being told that tea that you're buying was produced by that person you are seeing there. It's helping him to have a better living. I think that is a better world. That is a world that I would want to belong to. Please look at me. Look at me as part of the chain and pay me what should be due to me.
You were listening to an interview done by Paul Goodwin, who spoke with Fair Trade tea farmer Julius Ethangatha on Indie Media on Air on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara. We'll be back in a moment.
1973, Geburtsjahr. Wichtig für mich als auch geschichtlich, denn da wurde klar, dass die CIA...